music, news, entertainment. It's all right here. This is the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, it's Kelly, and this week on the show, we speak to pop recording artist Parker Matthews about his song, More Than Friends. We also talk about what his journey has been like since he left Pittsburgh to move to Los Angeles to pursue a music career, the importance of mental health, being a part of the LGBTQ plus community, which vocalists have influenced him, and a whole bunch more. We then speak with our music editor, Sharon Hyland, about the uptick in support for women's sports. It has been a banner year for women athletes, breaking attendance records and having tons of fans show up and show out to show their love and support for these female athletes.
Follow us on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show.
We are super excited to welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show a Los Angeles-based singer-songwriter, pop artist, all that sort of good stuff. He's got a new song out called More Than Friends, and we're very excited to welcome to the show. Hello, Parker Matthews.
Hey, Kelly, how are you doing?
I'm very well. I'm really excited to have you on the show finally. And
thank you. We always
have to start off by finding out, you know, how the journey began. So when did music become like a focal point in your life?
So there's two answers to this question. So one, I don't remember. It was when I was in my mother's stomach and we was at an Amy Grant concert and I was just like bebopping and into the beat. So she says, I guess that was the first touch of music that I had in my body. But I was 5 years old watching the Grammys, something that I can remember. And Whitney Houston was performing. And I told my mom, I was like, I want to do that. And at the time she was like, that's cute. Like, okay, of course. But growing up, music was always so important to me. And I was in vocal lessons several times a week. And I studied opera and jazz and pop and listening to so many of my vocal idols. They really taught me how to sing. But I always had that at the very core of who I am. And that just became me.
And so do you remember what Whitney song was singing? She was singing?
You know, I don't. I Have Nothing. Okay. But I don't quite remember exactly which one. But I remember seeing her and just being in complete awe.
And speaking of like power vocalists, you know, who are the artists that you listened to growing up? And do you find that they play a part in the music you produce today?
Definitely. So fun fact, Christina Aguilera actually went to my high school and grew up in the same area that I did. So I always felt an incredible connection to her just because of that closeness and also vocally speaking, listening to her material and her music. And Stripped, that album, I mean, every single song had a message and I love that. And for me as a young kid, listening to that, not quite knowing who I was at the time, but having this inkling of who I was, seeing Beautiful, that record, you know, that was like, wow, I feel like I'm going to be okay. So with all that to be said, I think that having those runs and that vocal power is something I definitely incorporate in every single song, because to me, that's like how you show the true emotion, but also being able to be so gentle with vocals and just producing ballads that hit right here. I mean, that's what it's about for me.
Did you ever take vocal lessons?
Yes. Yeah. Growing up, I did for sure. But when I was, my teachers used to get so mad at me because I would be doing runs like, that's not right. Don't do that. Learn how to sing like this. And I was like, all right, well, I can do both. So
that's amazing. Now I understand that you were in orchestra growing up, because I was in high school band, which still plays like a very important part, like in my heart. So how was orchestra?
Yes, it was amazing. So I grew up playing violin and piano, and we had this thing called the strolling strings where we put on concerts, but we would like walk around and play at the same time. If that makes sense. Like the auditorium or whatever venue we were in. So that was like a thing, but that was, I was in that and then honors chamber choir. And, yeah, I mean, that was those days. It's so funny thinking back from then to now and how much has changed. And at the time when you're in high school and elementary school, middle school, whatever, you don't realize how big the world is. And to you, like, that's your whole world. And then when you graduate and go on, it's like, whoa, there's so many other things. And I mean, the really cool thing, I think, was when you would be in band or orchestra, you'd have, I don't know, did you guys ever break off into small like quartets and just practice and kind of?
Yeah, we had stage band and then versus the big like full band.
Yeah. Yeah. But you would kind of learn to vibe off of each other. And I think that played a really crucial role into just being good at collaborating and wanting to collaborate with others and seeing what everyone can bring to the table to make a record the way that it is at the end.
Now, when you finished high school, I know you went off to study business, and I realize you didn't stay in that, but I wanted to ask you, has business, like your training in business, been helpful in your career as an artist? Because a lot of artists are not business-minded at all, zero.
Yes. Well, let me start off by saying I'm glad I did that because my parents made me. But at the time, I was like, I hate this. This is not what I want to do. This sucks. But I did learn a lot in school. And even though, because I worked for Carnegie Mellon for about a year and a half after I graduated back in Pittsburgh. We'll talk about that later. But yes, it did help me. Because a lot of the times, so many people don't, they just will sign a contract without reading it. I'm like, you can't do that. You have to, because a company's going to try to screw you over in a heartbeat if they can. So I'm like, no, let's read this and try again.
Yeah, exactly. Smart move. Now, talk to us about the decision to leave like Pittsburgh. Was it always going to be LA? Or first of all, was it a hard decision to leave Pittsburgh? And then was it always going to be LA? Or did you think about going to New York?
So it was, well, okay. So I was working at Carnegie Mellon for a year and a half after college. And I went to see one of my friends that lived in Amsterdam. And we were there having like the best time. And I was just like, you know what? I'm so unhappy. I don't in Pittsburgh, like, just because it's just not, I feel like I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do. Like this is my soul is just like something's not right. So I came back from that trip and was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Cause like, I hate working this job. And it wasn't because it was a bad job. I just knew in my heart that it's not what I was supposed to be doing. So I was out one night at a bar. Have you been to Pittsburgh before?
I have not.
Okay. So it was at a small gay bar in a place called Shadyside, which is actually a nice area, even though the name doesn't make it sound like that. But I was out, and my French friend worked at a recording studio. And he was like, do you want to come to a session? I was like, yeah, I would love that. And going to that session totally reignited the spark of like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, oh my God. It was like, hit me like a brick wall. So it was really after that trip and then going to see this recording studio that I realized like, I can't be here, and like no one's going to come knocking on my door in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Like, hey, do you want to like work on a song together? So I literally told my mom, I was like, look, I'm leaving. I don't have a plan really, but the plan is to go to LA and I will figure it out. So I packed 7 bags, shipped my car, never looked back. It was definitely a whirlwind, I will say, between then and now, but the hustle was very real. And I think that if you put your mind to it, you can do anything. As cliche as that might sound, it is true.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is pop recording artist Parker Matthews. Don't forget to hit up his website, officialparkermatthews.com, to grab all of his social media handles. Parker, when you landed in LA or got to LA, was there a sense of like, oh my God, what did I just do? Or was it like, no, this is the land of opportunity for me?
It was definitely, when I landed, I was super excited. But when we got to my apartment, my best friend had come with me and all my stuff was there. And I was just kind of like, I'm thinking I'm going to have an anxiety attack because I don't even know where to begin. And he was like, all right, let's start with this box and then we'll go from there. So thankfully he was with me. But this might sound dumb, but I remember I went to, there's a place called The Grove. It's a shopping mall. And I used GPS to get there. And this was the very first night. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to figure out how to get back home. I didn't use the maps. And it like took me a long time, but I figured it out.
That's amazing. And I did want to ask you too, like when you got to LA, how quickly did you start to find your community? Because like, you know, I've interviewed a bunch of artists, especially Canadian artists who have headed down to LA. And there's, I know like a good contingent of Canadians that have like kind of found their communities and they all kind of seem to find each other at some point.
Yeah.
And then I've had different stories where some people, you know, really loved being in LA and kind of found their community quickly. And then others saying like, no, this is not for me. So obviously you've been there for 7 years, so it is for you. But how quickly did that turnaround to start in like finding your place in the music world?
I think there was, I mean, I would say it took me at least, I mean, I'm still growing it to this day to, you know, new connections and building my team further. But I would say probably about a year. Because you know, there's the whole party scene. And if you get too wrapped up in that, it's your dreams just get further and further and further away from actually becoming reality. So I did that for the first couple of months and I was like, wait a minute, I got to refocus here. Let's see. But actually, the very first studio I started working in was out of Red One studio. He's no longer at this place, but it was Hans Zimmer's old studio as well. But I met So I matched with someone on Tinder, went out with him, and his roommate was the sound engineer for Red One. And we started working late night after Red One sessions were done on my own material. So that was really cool. And that made me focus even harder because I know I'm sitting in the same chair that Lady Gaga sat in to write Bad Romance, you know, years prior. And I'm like, that this is so cool. And there's, you know, plaques and Nicki Minaj on the wall and all this stuff. And I'm like, whoa, like this is like, that's the goal one day. What do we have to do to get there? And then, you know, between that person and then I'd met the next person and kind of really built that. And the more that you meet these people, you definitely grow and learn so much and how to write songs better and how to, you know, just melodic chord progressions and all those things. So it was definitely a journey, but it's probably been, I'd say about a year and a half to build that initial team.
Have you had a chance yet to work with Red One? And if not, is he on the bucket list? And who is a producer that you want to work with that's still on the bucket list?
No, I haven't had a chance to work with him, but but he's not on the bucket list. I would say production, like Max Martin, hands down. And that anything he touches just goes like number one.
It's true.
And it's not even just for the numbers, because he writes good material. That's what it's about. Or now, Ryan Tedder is great. You know, I mean, these people are amazing.
Yeah, Ryan Tedder is next. I was actually, funny enough, I was thinking about him last night because I was driving home from the radio station where I work at and was listening to the show after mine. And One Republic came on and I just started thinking, because I've interviewed Ryan before. He's amazing. And yeah. I just was thinking, I'm like, it's so crazy how he's managed to do One Republic stuff and then do all these things for everybody else and just like continue to put out songs. It's bananas.
Yeah. And I really like the way that both of them work, but it's like, I was in a session two nights ago for somebody else and I was helping them write a song just as a favor. And it's totally, his vibe is more John Mayer-ish kind of avenue, which is great. That's just not my specific vibe personally, but it was really fun to sit in sessions like that where it's not for me, but I'm helping them tell their story. And a lot of the times my favorite thing is when I write a song with someone else and it's, they just play. They're like, I don't know the words. I don't even know what I want to say, but like, I have a melody idea. I have a production like scratch. And I was like, all right, well, let me hear it. And I'll listen to it. And my mind works that I can hear something once and be like, boom, this reminds me of this, this, or this, or just makes me feel like this. So we sat down and to be able to do that. And they're like, okay, I like that idea. And I'm like, all right, let's write and then knock it out.
What do you think of the situation in pop world these days? And it's been this way probably for like 8 to 10 years, if not longer, but like where it's like a group of people need to write a hit song oftentimes.
So there's a couple of different angles you can look at this. So legally speaking, even if someone's in the room and doesn't contribute, they technically have a right to the record because they were there. So that when you see 9 or 10 names in a song, they don't always contribute, but they were there. So that's one way to look at it. Another, the most I've ever had writing a song was 3 other people and myself. So I don't know. I mean, I think that it depends. If you don't know what you want to write about and you want to have a team come in and help you make it the best that it possibly can be, I think that's cool. If Max Martin insisted on bringing 50 people, I'd be like, sure, that's fine. But I'd like to tell the story. personally, when I come into sessions for myself, I come in with the story, usually more often than not, the title of the song already. And then we start with the hook after I tell everyone the entire full version of the story. Then we kind of dive into it.
Do you think you have found your sound yet? Are you still evolving into it?
I think I would say that I found it. A lot of the times, and I kind of touched on this earlier, is because I listened to so many power female vocalists growing up, I was like, you have to always hit these high notes and do these extreme runs every single time. But I'm like, you know, I leaned into that lower, more gentle, deeper side of my voice. And over the last probably 2 years, I'd say, and hearing it back on records, I'm like, I really like that. So I think it's finding the perfect combination of incorporating both the intense power and that gentleness and that tone of vulnerability, because that's very important to me. To kind of translate that through the music. That's being able to combine those both, I would say, is how I found my sound.
Latest song is called More Than Friends. Tell us how the song came about. Like, did it come about easily? And what do you want people to take away from it?
Yes. So I wrote that song back in December of last year. It was a 2-day writing camp. We wrote 10 songs in 2 days, which was crazy. But I was like, we're going to do it. And we did. It was the very first song we wrote. And It's about a guy from back at home. His name is Vinny. He doesn't know this, but I'll tell you. But he was a straight guy that I worked with at a restaurant back there. And, it, you know, being with him, we hung out all the time, one-on-one. Nothing ever happened more than a platonic level of intimacy. But I just felt like that underlying feeling of, like, I feel like there's something more here. So the song's about him, and nothing ever happened, like I said, but I moved away and we kind of fell out of touch. But so I came to the songwriting session that day. We started with the hook, did the pre-chorus, and then everyone took a smoke break. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to stay here. I'm going to just this loop where the verse would be, and I'm going to figure this out. And within 10 minutes, I was just like, and I was like, okay, here's the lyrics. They came back and they're like, perfect. So we wrote that. And then my favorite part of doing a song was recording it, because that's when you can put your little inflections in and make it what it is. And the cool thing about anybody that records a song is, like, you're the first person to do it. So yes, there'll be covers of it, but, like, you have that initial statement piece of, like, this is what the record is like to me. But the key takeaway I want from this song is to just realize that even with all my music, but especially with the song, is like, you're not alone if you've fallen for your straight best friend, and that you're not alone if you, you know, have been in those moments before, and realizing that it's okay if you like them. You know, they might not like you in return, but you can still relish in those nostalgic memories of positivity and love.
Is there going to be an EP or an album coming based off, you know, this single and other stuff you're working on?
So it's interesting, because I feel like unless you're a major artist, it's kind of wasteful to do an EP or album. Because if you picture, like, taking a big rock and just throwing it into a water mix, one big splash, and that's it, versus singles kind of create a ripple effect. So it kind of builds your audience. I'm definitely open to the idea. My team and I are talking about it. It would be an EP, if anything. But there definitely is a storyline, whether it is, even if it is singles, there's still a storyline that we're building here.
Now, I wanted to ask you about, you know, being, I guess, like, open with the fact that you are in the LGBTQ plus community. Like, was there ever a fear to be yourself?
It was never a fear. I just kind of got steered away from using he or him and more you or they. And when my initial years out here, and about 2.5 to 3 years ago, I was just like, you know what? No, like, if that doesn't work for you, then you don't work for me as far as working with people. And because I'm like, look, the point of everything I do is be yourself, being okay, loving yourself, and being cool with being vulnerable. So I was like, if that's what I want to say, but then I can't even say he, him, then what are we doing here? I was like, you know, no, this is my material. This is my music, and this is my story. So it wasn't about you, it was about him. He broke my heart. There's no question about that, you know? So that was kind of the first big step that I took, and like, no, this is me, heart on my sleeve. I don't care. I want to be the most authentic version of me that I can.
Do you feel a responsibility, because you're an artist and to be a role model for maybe young kids in the LGBTQ plus community who might be looking up to you? And because it is still a struggle, I mean, things are much better than they were even 15 years ago, but it's still hard.
Yeah, 100%. And even though way before me, there was Freddie Mercury and George Michael. But I feel like it was for sure not accepted back then. And even when I was growing up, it was still kind of like, well, maybe. Like, but now, you know, the world is, at least this country, is a lot more open. I think that having records and like that I can be myself and let everyone else know it's okay to be you is super important right now. And especially in other countries that it's not accepted at all, or it's still very frowned upon. Learning that sense of inclusion is super important. And knowing that you're part of a bigger family and that you have a purpose here is something that is incredible. And if we can make that the foundation of everything that we do moving forward, I think that would be extremely powerful.
Now, talk to us about the importance of mental health in your life and towards your fans. Like, what do you want them to know?
I think, well, first of all, you know, I grew up, and without going into extreme detail, there was a time that I was on the verge of committing suicide myself. So I have 100% been there. I know what that's like. music was what saved my life. So I think that even if a song can take you away from whatever you're going through, even for 3 minutes or however long the record is, that's the important part of music. And the really cool thing is, if you can come to a venue as people, you know, it's not about watching me sing. It's about singing with me together in that room. And I want you to leave feeling better than you do when you walked in. Because the thing about music that's so awesome is that even though my story is different than your story, when you hear a song and you listen to the lyrics, it reminds you of something in your life. And you're like, wow, I feel seen and validated because I know what those emotions are like too. And then you hit replay and you kind of live in this moment of thinking about or moving past it or whatever it is. Or if it's a song that makes, you know, getting over someone or something, it's like, yes, I can do it. Like, I, you know, this made me feel like that. So that's a really awesome thing and the true power of music.
Do you have plans to tour? Like, do you have things coming up this summer?
Yes. I'm actually working with a whole live team right now, putting a show together. I don't have specific dates or anything like that yet. We're putting the whole thing like from the ground up together, which is really cool. Because there's so many cool things when you do a live show, like that when you watch it, you don't think about it, but you're like, wow, like the way the drum hit right there, like you add things to build up a record to like make it a live show. So that's what we're working through that. But I'm like, wow, this is so much fun. Like
And what is Parker Matthews manifesting for himself in the next like 6 months to year? Like, what do you see for yourself?
So definitely touring, just really upping the ante on the collaborations. I'm working with a DJ named Zach Martino right now in New York, and he was under the same level that Armin van Buuren was in, and he's kind of going off on his own now, and just is an incredible DJ. But more people like him, where I can just, you know, because I would love to just fly in for the night to New York. He's performing at a big club, and like, hey, this is a new record. Like, what's up, New York? Like, and just put that on, and like he continue on with his show. But you know, those kind of collaborations where. Because he's more EDM, and if you do an EDM pop record together, it's like, whoa, like there's so many cool things you could do with that. But, and then eventually going to Europe and then building a team over there and just really expanding that network of people for sure.
What advice would you give to someone right now who is you like 5 years ago, like, and wants to be doing what you're doing?
I know it's going to be work. Yes, it's going to be work, but just don't give up. I think that, you know, there's going to be a lot of days where it seems like, what am I doing? This is so difficult, or this didn't work out. And I really had my heart set on that specific thing working out and it doesn't. That's okay. Because, you know, there's the old saying, one door closes, another one opens. But to take that one step further, if the door doesn't always open, sometimes you got to like pick the lock or kick the door down to make it open. So, but yeah, I mean, if you just believe in yourself and are your number one fan in a sense of like, I got this. Everybody else doesn't even have to believe in you. If you have that core energy and power of doing it yourself, then you got it.
Amazing. Now I want to have you do some fast fact questions for me.
Okay. So let me get ready for this.
Question number one, if you could switch places with any artist or producer for one day, who would it be and why?
Max Martin, because of the people he works with, and just like to sit in that room and just feel like mind explosion.
Is there a top 40 song in the last like 2 years, maybe in 5 years, whatever it is, that you wish you had written?
It's a little longer than five, but Into You by Ariana Grande.
Great song.
Yeah.
If you could be in a writing session with three other songwriters, who would it be?
Bonnie McKee, Ryan Tedder, I've already said Max Martin once, but... I'll say those three, like off the top, that'd be who it was.
Amazing. Now, what is your favorite way to procrastinate?
Well, I have extreme ADHD, so pretty much anything shiny will do. I think I jump from task to task. So I'm like, oh no, what's this? Oh, that needs to be cleaned. Oh, wait a minute. And then there's cabinets open, there's all kinds of things. It just takes me forever to get something done.
What do you always have in your fridge?
Sparkling water and Coke Zero.
Okay. What's the screensaver on your phone?
Let me show you right now. It's a broken piano because it reminds me of all my reminders too. even when you're broken, you can still make music.
That's really cool. I love that. That's amazing. And if you could go out to dinner with an artist who's either alive or dead to pick their brain, who would it be?
I mean, because I haven't met her yet, and she's my hometown girl, Christina Aguilera, for sure.
if you were, you know, if you had to move anywhere else in the world right now, apart from Los Angeles, to further your career, where would it be?
Probably New York, because even though it's more Broadway, there still is a lot of pop happening there and some great, great recording studios.
Amazing. And what message do you want to leave your fans with?
No matter what this day holds for you, know that you are loved, you belong here, and you deserve the very, very best.
Parker, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me, Kelly. I love being here. Thank you. Thank you.
Make sure you follow Parker Matthews. Hit up his website, officialparkermatthews.com, to grab all of his social media handles.
Listen anytime, any place. Just a click away. KellyAlexanderShow.com.
Always happy when we are joined by our music editor, Sharon Hyland. Hello, Sharon.
Oh, hi, Kel. How are you?
I am fantastic. And I'm super excited to talk about the topic we are going to delve into this week. We normally talk about all things music and or entertainment, and this would be categorized under the file of, I guess, sportainment, maybe?
Sport. Oh, very good.
Sportainment, I like that. I know
nice
you like
portmanteau.
Aaron Hyland likes a good portmanteau. So, yeah, because I know you and I do enjoy women's sports, and I guess I'll start off by saying in the last X amount of months, it feels like maybe over a year at this point, but it really seems like support for women's sports has really upticked.
I agree with you.
Yeah. So let's talk. First of all, let's talk about what sports you enjoy professionally for the women. I know for me, it's like basketball and hockey and soccer.
Yeah. Same for me, actually. I find that there's a different, the level of competition for men's and women's sports is the same. Both teams want to win.
Yeah.
Right. I find the difference in the performance en route to the win is a level of finesse that is different with women. And I think if you were to pull out hockey as an example, there's no fighting, first of all, in women's hockey. Right. And it's very, when you think of men's hockey, fighting is a thing. They pander to the crowd. You know, people love it when they get a good scrap going.
Mm-hmm.
There's none of that in women's hockey. Surely they get ticked off at each other. So there's a level of annoyance. Let's say they know how to push each other's buttons and stuff, but it's not a part of the game that requires like, okay, now you're going to get a 5-minute penalty, and this person's going to go, and you're going to put your team in jeopardy because you acted like a goon. But you're acting like a goon on purpose because the crowd seems to lap it up. So I'm not a fan of just watching people drop their gloves and just wail off on each other, just because I found that while we are used to it in hockey, it has transcended into other sports, and it takes away from the sport. It takes away from the sportsmanship and the game in general. I think it sets a bad tone. So for my taste, I don't like the fighting. But certainly that's a difference. And so with hockey, you get to see that finesse shine, plays made. And similar too, I think we'll end up talking about university basketball, because I love watching basketball. But I found that with professional basketball, it's kind of boring. Do you know, like it's pass, pass, dunk. It's just back and forth up the court. Mm-hmm. Whereas with college level basketball, it's more about the plays, and there's a real sense of drawing you in, and you pick a team. Like, you might not know anybody on the team, but you're you know, aligned with them, and they mean something to you. And it's because they're, I think, paying full respect to the game itself. Do you concur, Cal?
J'agree. And I wanted to, you know, why we're talking about this is because, you know, we just finished the NCAA championship games for both men and women. And I want to read you some stats, Sharona.
Please do.
What you think about this, because this was the impetus for why I wanted to even speak about this today, is because I was so impressed with the numbers. And again, I think we all know in the last several weeks that it was headed this way, but the NCAA Women's Basketball Championship between Iowa and South Carolina almost had 19 million viewers, shattering records to become the most watched women's college basketball game ever measured by Nielsen. And then further to that, the game not only blew past the men's final between Purdue and UConn by almost 4 million
viewers. So 4 million viewers more were watching the women's game. It also was the most viewed basketball game of the past 5 years, outpacing any NBA contest during that period, according to Nielsen.
Well, isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I think that it's not even just the game that's got its differences between men's and women's. It's the idea that the women's sports are being promoted mm-hmm. properly and put on at times where people will watch them. Like, I mean, it's simple equation of how are we going to get viewers? Well, we'll put it on when people will watch it. And then we'll promote when we've scheduled that these games are going to happen, like they do with the men's sports all the time. Women's sports are great to watch. And if people know when they're on, and if they get the same sort of treatment, like those stories about like origin stories about where these players come from and their family history and those heart, not heart wrenching necessarily, but those heartstring pluckers that they do, you know, during the Olympics and stuff like that. Those are the ones that get you in. They find you a fan of those players, and then you root for that team.
Yeah.
And they've always done it with men. So the fact that they're giving the attention to women, finally, it's not even done, right? Like, there's still much more growth that can happen, obviously. But the fact that it's can't be surprising that this many people are interested in watching women's sports. It's just now, oh, okay, well, we should watch it because that looks interesting. Like, they've just given it the proper treatment like they've always given the men's teams.
Mm-hmm. And there's levels too to it, because now also, even though, again, back in the day, there was definitely, if we use basketball as an example, there were women personalities, you know, and now it just seems like they are getting more focus on certain players, like, and so now you're starting to root for, like, you know, like women's players, like a Caitlin Clark who was playing for Iowa, you know, like Angel Reese who was playing for LSU, like a Camila Cardoso who's playing for South Carolina. Like, there's personalities and they're getting promoted as such, so it's like more excitement. And then also the other aspect to it, which is, I think, a double-edged sword in a way, by the way of, like, it should be this way, but it should also not be this way, which is, I think women's sports are more affordable,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, and so I think that's also been a draw where, like, prices are outrageous for, you know, let's say men's professional sports teams in many regards. And I think women's sports are more affordable at this point. Hopefully they'll also go up because, you know, not that you want to be outpaced to pay for these things, watch them, but you want women's salaries as athletes to go up. So,
yeah, they shouldn't have to have other jobs.
Yeah.
This shouldn't be something they do on the weekend.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's the fact that, again, it's one of those things on the list of things that you still scratch your head over in 2024, that there's a wage gap.
Yeah.
For no other reason than the gender. And go ahead and try to qualify that with us, please. Tell me why men should be making more for doing the same job. Really.
Yeah.
And, if, you know, when it comes to sports, and it goes back to what we were just saying, which is that there would be more of an audience if you promoted the fact that the games were on. If you gave the attention the same that you did for the men's teams to the women's teams, people would be interested. And clearly, when you have March Madness, this can't be the thing that's madness, that people watch the games because they're women. What? And they're young women. These are people that are still in school, a lot of whom will be coming back to hopefully get to the big show again next year. We have to be able to set a better example of as people that are, you know, on the other side of school, you know, that oh, okay, well, it's going to be better when you finish school. It can't just be all on you to finish school and then change the world. Like, we've still got some work to do and room to do it. So let's keep going.
I also think too, Sharon, that some of the change, at least with getting more awareness of women's personalities, is the fact that they're really letting that name, image, likeness go. You can be a nil athlete now, like, where you are reaping the rewards of what you're putting out as a college athlete.
Right.
So, like, for example, Angel Reese, who I really enjoy watching from LSU, you know, she has like a nickname as the Bayou Barbie. And like, she's been able to capitalize on that. And now she is going to be in the draft. And by the time that people hear this interview, this year's 2024 draft will have happened. And
right.
So Angel should be in the top 10 for sure. So we'll see where she ends up. Caitlin Clark should be going to Indiana because she'll go number one. So that'll be cool. But I think the fact that they're able now to promote themselves and actually see a reward, and also the social media aspect, because they can also bring awareness through their social media channels.
True. And the fact that they've, it's been a few years now that you've seen women on sports networks, reporting sports, calling games, things like that. It stands out, but these women know the game as well as men do.
Yes.
Do you know, like, if you think of hockey in particular and think of the guys that are calling the games or commenting on the games, like the sort of scrum afterward where they're giving their opinion as to why, who did what. If you're looking at a panel of four people, let's say one woman and three men, two of those men haven't played. Do you know? They know the sport, and kudos to them for knowing the sport so well and being such an in-depth fan, knowing details. I'm not knocking it, but there's something to be said for a person, man or woman, who has played the game, so it's like frontline experience that can then effectively broadcast it to, you know, however many millions of people that are watching it. So the challenge then is to make it interesting, and is that it's not solely dependent on the person having played the game, but it can't be solely dependent on it being a man.
Mm-hmm. And some of the best sideline reporters are women, like Pam Oliver for the NFL. I love Pam.
Yeah.
I love Pam. And then Holly Rowe for NCAA stuff. She's ridiculously, and I saw an article about her recently, just leading up to the championship games, where they were talking about like just what an excellent reporter she is on the sideline to get. And that's why coaches want to talk to her, you know, when they're mm-hmm. like super stressed, but they'll give her a minute to get some of their commentary in. And she was actually the one, if people don't know who Holly Rowe is, she was presenting the trophy also at the game for the women. So she's amazing. And also another aspect too that I appreciate is some of these superstar male athletes are really behind women, like LeBron James. Like they're tweeting about it, or they're putting out Instagram posts about it. So people are like, you know, they're doing us a great favor to do that. And I don't mean favors in like, we owe them or whatever, but it's very good that they're behind women.
Think of like a Reggie Miller, who grew up with a sister playing mm-hmm. basketball, and she herself got to the WNBA. You have to be respect. If you want to have a relationship with a woman in your life, I think you have to be respectful of what that person or that gender can bring to the sport that you also know. It's not just because you're a guy that you're good at it, because mm-hmm. you know the sport and you've committed your time to getting better and better. And women do the same thing. I want to give a shout out to Hazel May, who reports for the Toronto Blue Jays. So she gets all the stats. She's on the sideline. She's interviewing the players. She's like the go-to person who gets it done, and she's good.
Amazing. Yeah, no, I think we're in a great time in a way for women's sports right now. Like, it just feels like we've got the magic stardust is behind
for sure.
Right now. And I cannot wait for it to keep going. And I hope now that Caitlin, you know, is going to the NBA, I think obviously because she's so ridiculously talented, you know, that'll bring even more of a spotlight, because that's the one, you know, it's funny because like for professional women's hockey league, which just had their first season and they're still trying to finish it off. They've broken attendance records in like Minnesota. I believe that mm-hmm. we did it here in Montreal where we are. I think Toronto also broke it at the Scotiabank Center. So like, it's, you know, amazing. WNBA has been around for years and there's a lot of excitement around it. I think that there could be more though. I think there could be more. And I think that also the part that was frustrating to me about the WNBA is I just hope that more teams happen or they have more space for women, because for example, last year, I became a pretty big fan of Alexis Morris, who was on the LSU Tigers. Like, they won the game, mm-hmm. the championship game. And I had no doubt that she was going to be drafted, right? Like, and it was funny because they finished the game, and I think 2 weeks later, it was the NBA draft or the WNBA draft. She got drafted, but not super high, which was kind of crazy to me. I think she was drafted 20 or 22nd. But she went to the team's training camp and got cut. And so now, like, she was out of play for a little bit. I mean, she managed to figure some things out, and now she's actually part of the Harlem Globetrotters
production. Oh, cool.
Which is great because she's got such a good personality for it. Like her on sort of court alter ego is Lex Luthor, which I think is pretty cool. And so I follow her on Instagram, and like, I, you know, her star definitely rose, but it's sad because she, to me, should be in the NBA or the WNBA. Mm-hmm. And there's not enough roster spots for her. Now, she also didn't help herself in a way in the fact that when she did get cut, she put out some comments out of frustration. And I think out of being a young athlete,
yeah,
she basically said that to the effect of like, you know, some older players might need to move out to make room, and she did have to apologize. And again, I'm paraphrasing now. That wasn't exactly how she said it.
But no, I get it.
The intonation. And but it's mind-boggling to me that she's not on a team. And then even Jasmine, whose last name is I'm forgetting right now, but she was the one that kept launching all the three balls last year for LSU in that game, and she's had to go overseas to play. So, and now she's headed to Mexico. So I hope they can either open up more teams or open up more roster spots for women in WNBA.
That would be good. It's slow and steady, I think. Two things. One, Caitlin Clark, I think, with all the pressure of playing at college level. So again, still a student. Yeah. really wore that pressure vest well. And I thought kudos to the winning team's coach, who singled her out when they were accepting the trophy, saying that she's a goat for the game.
Yep.
And she's going to take it places. So I thought that was a real class act move of the winning coach, you know, shouting out the opposing team, but certainly pointing the finger directly at one of the stars at the college level, who certainly will be a star at a professional level. So it's something to look forward to.
Dawn Staley is I love that girl.
Yeah.
South Carolina. And like, I remember, I don't know, you obviously you're a bit older than me, Sharon, but like she,
hey, watch it.
I just said a bit. I didn't say you're eating early bird dinner yet.
But I am very hungry right now.
but do you remember her playing in the 90s? Because I remember watching Dawn Staley in the 90s.
I remember the name. 90s were a long time ago, Kel. There's a lot I forgot about today. So
true. But she was, I just remember, because like also back in that day, there really wasn't any place for women to go. You know, like a lot of overseas if they were going to do anything. But yeah, like, and I just saw it popped up on my Instagram feed. She was the Naismith Player of the Year, I think, in 1991, 1992. And then she's got at least three or four of them of Naismith Coach of the Year.
Pretty cool.
So she's definitely a goat of the game, and we're lucky to have her. And she's such a great advocate, I think, for it. So
speaking of advocates, I just remember the second thing I wanted to say when I said I had a couple of things. The second thing blanked for a second, but just got to meet Joey Hot Rod De La Rosa from the Harlem Globetrotters just about a week and a half or so ago, standing at 7'1". And talk about being an ambassador for the game. He just was one of the nicest people I've ever met. And to be at that level, skill level for play, and to be on a team that requires ambassadorship for a 28-year-old, he didn't seem like he was 28 to me, and no offense to any other 28-year-olds, but I thought this guy knows his spot, knows the gift he has, and knows what playing for an organization like the Harlem Globetrotters can do to impact kids' lives. So to any female players that are aspiring to do, you know, anything Globetrotter-wise, the impact will be significant. So kudos. Go get it.
Now you need to follow Alexis Morris, because now she's on the Harlem Globetrotters. So
I'm going
to
do that. And you know what? I asked all the questions that you would ask a tall person. And he was this guy, Joey Hot Rod, was just really very, you know, he hears all these questions all the time. So I'm sure he was like, yeah. But he was very polite. And so I thought, I'll level the field. And I said, 7'1". I said, well, you probably get asked that a lot. He goes, yeah, pretty much all the time, every single time. And I said, well, I'm 5'4". So just in case you wanted to know, now you know. We're even. Almost 2 feet taller than me.
It's crazy, but yeah, they're the talent level on the Harlem Globetrotters, I think, does a great it's a great way to advocate for the sport, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
So it's very good. Sharon Hyland, thank you very much for this.
Kelly, thank you for making this game time decision to be a talk about sport and less about music, but if we can just trail out with Queen, We Are the Champions, we will satisfy our music requirements.
There we are. Maybe I'll have That is our music editor, Sharon Hyland. You can follow her, of course, on Instagram at TheSharonHyland. And don't forget to check out the podcast that we co-host together, 90s Now. And you can follow us on social media handles at 90s Now FM.
The Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you very much for spending time with us on the program this week. And a big thank you to our guests, Parker Matthews and Sharon Hyland. I also want to thank our super producer, Andrew Sabino, for doing such a wonderful job putting the show together. And please don't forget that you can grab all of our social media handles by hitting up our website, KellyAlexanderShow.com. Have an amazing week. You and I will chat soon.
The Kelly Alexander Show.